Paper money, or banknotes, was introduced in the Song Dynasty China in the 11th century. And for a long time, cash was king. But it wasn't very convenient. Then in 1950, Diners Club introduced a card that could be used to pay for items at restaurants and stores. And over time, plastic supplanted paper as the preferred method of payment. But we're finding out that it's not very secure. Credit card fraud cost customers and retailers in the U.S. $16 billion in 2016, an amount that's expected to double in the next 4 years. Enter mobile wallet. Convenient and secure and fueled by the proliferation of smartphones and high-speed bandwidth, mobile payment globally is expected to quadruple to $3.2 trillion by 2022. Today we'll hear from Professor Sunil Gupta about his case entitled Paytm, Building a Payments Network. I'm your host, Brian Kenny, and you're listening to Cold Call.
So we are all sitting there in the classroom. The
professor walks in.
And they look up, and you know it's coming. Oh, the dreaded cold call.
Sunil Gupta is an expert in the area of digital technology and its impact on consumer behavior and firm strategy. Those are both right in the sweet spot of what we're going to talk about today. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. I really enjoyed this case. I will confess up front, I'm a bit of a Luddite when it comes to paying with my smartphone, but I'm starting to come around to it. And reading this case made me feel like I'm way behind the times and I need to jump on board.
I learn all these things from my kids also.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to ask you to start the way I start all of these, is just to tell me who's the protagonist and what's on his mind.
So the protagonist in this case is a guy named Vijay Shekhar Sharma, who's an entrepreneur. And on his mind is that the company has been very successful beyond his imagination. By the end of 2016, they have 140 million wallets, mm-hmm. digital wallets on the platform. But he's very ambitious. At the end of 2016, the company valuation is still private, is about $5 billion. But his goal is to make a $100 billion company.
That's very ambitious.
And that's the first Indian company in his mind which will be $100 billion. So it's a very ambitious thing. And the question is, is he dreaming or this is for real?
Yeah. And for people who don't know, can you just describe what mobile wallet means, just so we're all talking about the same thing?
So the evolution of the company is very different, but mobile wallet simply is a mechanism to pay through your mobile phone. In the U.S., it's Venmo, for example, or PayPal. Mm-hmm. In Kenya, it was M-Pesa. So there are different versions of it in different parts of the world. But emerging market is kind of very interesting. In China, it's WeChat is another mechanism for mobile payment, and of course, Alipay.
Yeah. How did you settle on writing a case about Paytm? What prompted you to write about them?
So I'm certainly interested in mobile as a particular medium, whether it's through for payment or whether it's for healthcare, whether it's for in banking and other purposes. And India as an emerging market is also fascinated because I grew up there and I see a lot of changes happening in India. Mm-hmm. So the combination of mobile payment in India seemed like a perfect combination. I was curious to see what's happening.
Yeah, and I've had the benefit of being to India a few times, and I'm always surprised about how many people have smartphones there. The proliferation of smartphones has been tremendous in India, as an example.
Yeah, and that's true for all developing countries, emerging markets like India, that they leapfrog. So India went through a situation where there are very few households had landlines, mm-hmm. But now everybody has a mobile phone. Nobody has a landline. So I think that's the typical thing that happens in Kenya and many other places, that people jump away from the old technology straight away to the new generation.
Let's talk about Paytm. They had a long history, so they've been around for quite a while. And this is a newer aspect of what they're doing. But can you talk a little bit about the evolution of the company?
So it's kind of interesting. The founder, Vijay Shekhar Sharma, he started the old company, which is called 197, in 2000. And 197 is the phone number you dial, just like in the U.S., you dial 911 or 311. Ah. In India, you dial 197 if you wanted some information from a telecom operator. Mm-hmm. And they started by being a value-added service to the telcos. So there are several large telco operators in India. And they would, back in 2000, when most people had feature phones, they would call this number 197 to find out the latest cricket score, for example, or listen to a song or something like that.
Yeah.
So they were selling these value-added services. That's how they grew. They became a reasonable size, and they were servicing the largest telecom operators. And then once that revenue segment grew, the telco said, hey, we don't need you. We can do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. So they were literally wiped out of business in 4 or 5 years just because they were so successful.
Wow.
The telecom operator says, we'll do it ourselves. Why do we have to give commission to you? Then this company morphed into being a marketing platform of cross-selling services for the telecom operators. And the notion was that if, as a telecom company, I see you making long-distance calls from India to the U.S., I can start selling you those packages because I know that's what you are interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Very soon, they were wiped out of that business because many of these players said, hey, we can do it ourselves. So they
keep working themselves out of a job here.
They keep themselves working out of the job. So only in 2010, they got into initially what they call the mobile recharge business. So in India, majority of the people who have mobile phones have a prepaid phone.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically pay up front and load some money on their SIM cards. As a result, there is no loyalty for any telecom operators.
And you're not locked into any
you're
kind
not
of
locked
relationship.
In. So you basically switch the SIM cards to go from, let's say, equivalent will be going from AT&T to Verizon.
Mm-hmm.
Your phone is unlocked and you can go anywhere. And the typical scenario was people will go to their local mom and pop store to load money onto their SIM card.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing this company did was saying, hey, rather than walking into this hot summer month to your local mom and pop store, why don't you just go to this website and you can recharge your phone and reload the money.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they started. A very simple use case. And typical amount of money people put in is about $2 or $3, which is about 100 rupees or 150 rupees. And of course, I put in $2 into my account and I take out $2. So there was $0 left in my account. But the company, by default, created a mobile wallet for you.
Mm.
So once they have done that, that's how they started.
Yeah.
They started finding new use cases. And that encouraged people to keep some money into their wallet more than just for the recharge.
What's Vijay like? I'm just trying to get a sense for, I mean, as we get further into the case, it becomes apparent that he really is very ambitious and wants to reach this goal. But what's he like as a leader?
He's actually a very humble and low-key guy. He's almost like a professor in some ways.
Uh-huh.
And when I went and first met him, he gave me, he just loved using the whiteboards and showing exactly how this thing evolved. He's also a guy who says, which I liked, is that the role of a leader is to look at what is around the corner. And he gives the day-to-day operations, delegates it to his team. So that's their job to manage it as well as they can. I don't interfere with that. My goal is to look for the next curve in the bend, mm-hmm. in the road, if you will.
And it's a pretty big organization. We're talking about 7,000 employees, I think.
Yeah. So it's a very large organization, and they're becoming larger as they go into the offline operation even more so.
What was their strategy? How did they set about to achieve this ambitious goal of being a $100 billion company?
So I think they saw a lot of traction, and the whole idea behind this is, and that's something that we find again and again, it's not about technology. It's about finding new use cases for the solution that you have.
Mm-hmm.
So they started with a recharge as the first use case. But the moment you have the mobile wallet, you say, okay, where else can people use it?
Yeah.
The next thing they found is we can use it for buses tickets and rail tickets. Again, think about small transaction, frequent usage. That was their key. Find use cases where it's used by lots of people very frequently and low transaction cost.
Uh-huh.
And then the next big jump that they had was when Uber came to India. And one of the challenges that Uber faced is, as compared to many other countries, if you want to use a credit card in India, because of regulation, you need double-factor authentication,
uh-huh.
which means your credit card company will send you a message, you have to approve it, get a PIN number, and then so that takes a while. Whereas Paytm, you didn't need that double-factor authentication.
Mm-hmm.
Paytm grew in a very different segment, a high-end segment, if you will, with Uber. So that was the another use case that helped them. And then they slowly found multiple use cases, whether it's for movie tickets, whether it's for their marketplace, whether it's for offline commerce and so on and so forth.
Yeah. They weren't really a brand in the sense that people knew who they were. They were just kind of in the background. But it's important, obviously, if you have such ambitious growth strategies, to establish yourself as a brand. How did they set about to do that?
I think two things happened. One was just the organic growth and word of mouth. And the offline entry for them also was very coincidental. The way Vijay described to me is they actually didn't even plan for the offline expansion.
Mm-hmm.
India is a very much of a cash economy. So imagine you're taking a taxi and you have a bill of 765 rupees. You don't have the cash or you don't have that change. So the taxi driver also says, instead of giving me cash, why don't you Paytm to me?
Mm-hmm.
Because both of them use Paytm for the small value transactions. So they learned from the consumers that the consumers are actually doing this transaction. And also P2P transaction, peer-to-peer transaction was free.
Mm-hmm.
So neither the taxi driver nor you pay any fee for that. So it was like a great value added for both parties.
Yeah.
Once they recognize that, they say, hey, why don't we just expand that in the offline, because there are small mom-and-pop merchants, the millions of those guys who can get that.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the brand building happened simply because people found uses of it. It became, at least in the small community, when I say small, I'm talking about 100 million people.
Yeah.
in that community of 100 million people, it became a verb. Like in the US, we say Venmo me the money, the same way they say Paytm it to me.
Okay.
Then to reach a larger audience, they use the traditional methods of going to the television and going to the popular sports.
And they did some co-branding as well, I think you mentioned in there.
And another great co-branding is with the large brands like Unilever and Pepsi and Coke. And it becomes a cashback kind of a mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of co-branding because Paytm is so popular among consumers, even the large consumer brands find it useful.
Yeah. So I couldn't help but think as I read through the case and looked at some of the exhibits, there are great exhibits there, that they were reaching really far really fast. You described some of the earlier failures that they had as they learned what they wanted to do. Are they moving too fast?
I think that's a common challenge for every startup. In some ways, growth is good, but is it too much of a growth,
yeah,
too fast? And the challenge is mostly in execution. Can you execute it well? In terms of funding, they're okay because their large funder for them is Alibaba, and mm-hmm, they have deep pockets. So I don't think the funding is a problem. The problem for them is execution challenges and getting the right talent.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, there's always a tendency for all these startups to sort of have a land grab. And there's in many of these markets, there's a winner-take-all because of network effects.
Yeah.
So some bit of a growth is necessary because you, in India, unlike in China, you have major other players in e-commerce, like Amazon is there in India and Flipkart is there in India. And it's very easy for Amazon to start a payment service which competes with them. So I think they want to grab a larger share of the market before all these players start entering the market.
Yeah, and that's just in India. If they try to go more broadly globally, it's going to be even more difficult.
And that's actually Vijay's ambition, is to say, can we replicate this model in other emerging markets? Mm-hmm. For example, in Middle East, same problems.
Yeah. Have you discussed this in class with MBAs and executives?
So this case was finished in January of 2017, so it's very fresh. And I've taught it only once. This was in an executive program in India.
Uh-huh. Well, so I'm very curious to hear how they, because they're living it, right?
They are living it, and I had Vijay come to class also.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting because everybody knows him by now in India for sure. And my first question was, how many people think current valuation of $5 billion will be more than 5 billion, let's say 5 to 10 billion in the next 5 years, or more than 10 to 20 billion, or more than 20 billion.
Yeah.
And every single person in the class said it will be more than 20 billion.
Wow.
In 5 years. So there's a lot of optimism. Now, of course, things can go wrong, but everybody was very excited. And of course, we talked about should banks be worried? Because are they friends or enemies to the bank? Should retailers be worried? So I think, should Visa and MasterCard be worried? Should telecom operators be worried? So I think there are a lot of different players. You can look at the world from their perspective and see.
I'm guessing you're already thinking about the B case on this one.
Yeah, I know. I think it'll be a very interesting story to watch.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
You can find the Paytm case along with thousands of others in the HBS case collection at hbr.org. I'm your host, Brian Kenny, and you've been listening to Cold Call, the official podcast of Harvard Business School.